Welcome to the Voice of America.
This is the news from the Voice of America.
The $500 million factory in Douala is expected to start.
From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Frances Alonso. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is expected to consult with his cabinet late Thursday after failing to repair a rift with the United States over construction in East Jerusalem. Mr. Netanyahu is due in Tel Aviv on Thursday, where he will brief ministers on his talks with President Barack Obama and other U.S. officials in Washington this week. Senior leaders of Mr. Netanyahu's ruling coalition are rallying behind the prime minister and his insistence that Israel will continue building settlements. Before departing Washington, Mr. Netanyahu said the two allies had made some progress in settling their dispute. China says it wants to resolve its differences with the United States through dialogue and negotiations. A foreign ministry spokesman told reporters in Beijing Thursday the government is willing to strengthen communications with Washington. Tensions have grown between China and the U.S. over a number of contentious issues. Meanwhile, China is opening a factory, in Cameroon to manufacture buses for West and Central Africa. China is Africa's third largest trading partner with a tenfold jump in commercial transactions over the last decade. VOA West Africa correspondent Scott Stearns reports.
The $500 million factory in Douala is expected to start producing buses by the end of the year, joining private investors from China and Cameroon. Government officials say it will create hundreds of new jobs, ease transport, and boost Cameroon's economic growth as a source of vehicles for West and Central Africa. Wu Ye is the vice president of China's National Machinery Import and Export Corporation.
Relations between two countries are very friendly, and the place, location is a very good place because it's the center and seaport of West African countries.
Zakaria Awanga is the deputy chief of international development in Cameroon's Ministry of Economy and Planning. He says the factory will give Cameroonian workers important new skills.
Engineers from Cameroon will be sent to China to start studying the industry of car assembly.
The agreement also calls for the delivery of 500 Chinese buses in July for use between and within Cameroonian cities. Scott Stearns, VOA News, Dakar.
U.S. President Barack Obama is promoting historic health care reform as a new poll shows Americans divided over the sweeping legislation he signed into law on Tuesday. Mr. Obama is giving a speech in Iowa City. He is expected to highlight portions of the new law that take effect this year. The head of the World Food Program says previous internal investigations have found no evidence of food aid having been illegally diverted in Somalia. A UN report leaked early this month charges up to half of the Somali aid is being diverted to corrupt contractors, radical Islamic groups, and local UN workers. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
World Food Program Executive Director Josette Sheeran calls Somalia her agency's most dangerous and complex operation. She says security concerns and unacceptable demands by local militants forced the World Food Program to temporarily suspend its aid distribution program in southern Somalia. The authors of the UN report blame the alleged diversion of food aid on a faulty WFP distribution system. Sheeran refutes these charges.
We have conducted numerous investigations. We have had no evidence and have not been presented with any evidence of any wide-scale diversion at any level near what was presented based on conversations in that report.
The World Food Program chief says her organization is very transparent and she welcomes any external investigation to look into this matter. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The head of the U.S. Central Bank says the economy still needs to be supported by low interest rates and other efforts to encourage lending. But Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke says as the economic recovery grows stronger, the bank is gradually and carefully withdrawing stimulus efforts. He did not say when interest rates will be raised. Bernanke told members of Congress Thursday that the period of intense panic at the beginning of the financial crisis prompted banks to drastically cut lending. I'm Frances Alonso, VOA News.
Hello and welcome to the Voice of America in Washington. I'm Susan Yawkey. Coming up, Israel's leader returns home without resolving a dispute with the U.S. On International Press Club, the causes for and the extent of discontent in Russia. Sweden tops technology advances to bolster economic growth and development. And springtime means peep time for many marshmallow candy-loving Americans is all ahead here on The Voice of America. Israel's leader is returning home from the United States after failing to resolve a dispute over Jewish settlement expansion. Robert Berger reports from Jerusalem.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ended a visit to Washington amid a continuing rift over Israeli construction in disputed East Jerusalem. U.S. President Barack Obama failed to persuade Mr. Netanyahu to halt building projects in East Jerusalem, which the United States sees as the capital of a future Palestinian state. In a speech in Washington, Mr. Netanyahu said Jerusalem is not a settlement and Jews can build anywhere in the city. Here in Israel, the right-wing government is backing the prime minister. Cabinet Minister Limor Livnat of the ruling Likud party says U.S. demands are unreasonable. Livnat told Israel Radio that Jerusalem is the capital of the state of Israel and of the Jewish people. She said Jews have prayed toward Jerusalem for thousands of years, so the prime minister cannot stop building there. The United States and Palestinians see the settlements as an obstacle to peace, and Israeli newspapers speak of a full-blown crisis in U.S.-Israel relations. A former Israeli diplomat in Washington, Yoram Edinger, says Jerusalem has always been a red line.
The challenge of Prime Minister Netanyahu is to prove to President Obama that not only is he, Netanyahu, not susceptible to pressure, but that Israel is not a banana republic which accepts policy dictated by Washington.
Mr. Netanyahu hopes to appease the United States with a series of goodwill gestures to the Palestinians aimed at goading them back to peace talks after a 14-month stalemate. But the Palestinians say until Israel halts settlement expansion in East Jerusalem, there is nothing to talk about. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Thousands rallied in cities across Russia this past week to demonstrate discontent with the government of Prime Minister Vladimir Putin. The so-called Day of Anger protests, organized by a coalition of opposition groups, were fueled by frustrations over some of the government's economic and social policies. In today's International Press Club, Judith Latham speaks with Russian, German, and American journalists and regional analysts about the causes for and the extent of the discontent.
Thousands of people have participated in anti-government rallies in about 50 cities and towns across Russia's 11 time zones, including Kaliningrad, St. Petersburg, Moscow, Irkutsk, and Vladivostok. Many analysts say the protests suggest widespread frustration resulting from Russia's most serious economic downturn in more than a decade. But some protesters called on Prime Minister Putin to resign. Eurasian expert Paul Goebel notes that although the Kremlin played down the recent demonstrations, the causes for discontent in Russia are many and varied.
Economic problems have intensified discontent, but there are a variety of issues that people are upset about, ranging from environmental protection, especially in Lake Baikal, to Vladimir Putin's failure to live up to his promises, and to a more general desire to have greater popular participation in making decisions about Russian life. I don't think it should be reduced simply to economic questions.
Mr. Goebel stresses that the protesters made numerous political demands.
The one that gets attention, of course, is that most of these meetings called for the retirement and or replacement of Vladimir Putin, the Russian prime minister and former president. But there are a large number of other demands. The environmental movement in the Transbaikal is seeking the closure of the Baikalsk cellulose paper factory so that it doesn't continue to contaminate that internationally recognized pearl There are people who are demanding increases in wages, increases in pensions. Others are calling for reduction in the rate of increase of charges for communal services. It's quite striking how much Russian activism was on display, even though, thanks to the efforts of the authorities and the use of the militia against demonstrators, the number of people who actually took part was, in most cases, not that large, anywhere from 500 to a few thousand.
But Russian journalist Masha Lipman of the Carnegie Moscow Center says she thinks the dissatisfaction is mainly confined to economic issues.
If we look at what caused those protests, it was mostly raised tariffs or increased import tariffs. Transport tax, which was the main cause of the earlier rally in Kaliningrad. In some cities, it was the issue of utilities payments. However, in many of those rallies, people carry signs or chant words such as Putin should resign or the cabinet should resign. But I would say, rather than being strictly political, this is an expression of a mood of frustration, a mood of exasperation, a mood of growing discontent with the government, the cabinet of Vladimir Putin. I would also point out that even though there is a clear surge of this public activism, still we are talking of small rallies.
Ms. Lipman says she thinks the growing political activism in Russia is not potentially destabilizing.
People may be eager to grumble, but not ready to take action. The general mood, I think, still is that of compliance with the status quo, the readiness to adjust to deteriorated conditions and living standards because of the economic crisis.
At this point, Ms. Lipman says, it is unlikely the protests will have any real impact on changing actual government policies.
What is important here is because of the economic crisis and because the government today cannot throw money at problems the way it could before the crisis hit Russia, the government indeed is forced to take those unpopular moves, raising taxes, raising tariffs. We're not talking about a movement at this point. We're talking about a mood. It will not go away, and there will be more rallies, and it remains to be seen how the government handles it.
German journalist Matthias Rüb of the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung agrees with Masha Lipman that although political repression in Russia is growing, ethnic tensions between Russians and non-Russians are intensifying, and ecological problems are worsening, serious political instability is unlikely.
The truth of the matter is that Putin is still very popular with the Russian population. His party is still very strong. Even they lost some influence at the last regional elections. They're very strong. It seems to me the social fabric of the Russian society is still very weak. If you really can prove the people that you will provide them with stability, I think they would always trade in democracy for stability. You know, as long as he has single-digit inflation, as long as there is moderate growth in society, the odds are pretty good for him that he will stay in power. I think he's still able to present himself as the one who made Russia strong again after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and I think that's still a very important asset for him.
The journalists suggest that what matters most is how the Russian government responds to the unrest. But right now, it appears unlikely the Kremlin will need to resort to force. For International Press Club, I'm Judith Latham.
In a moment, you'll hear Earth and Sky. But first, a reminder that we'd like to hear from you. You can write to us at VOA World News Now, Washington, D.C., 20237. Or you can send us an email to newsnow@voanews.com. That's newsnow@voanews.com. This is VOA World News Now.
Earth and Sky.
Thursday, March 25th. As darkness falls this evening, nearly everyone around the world should be able to find the planet Mars if your sky is clear.
We'll see Mars tonight as the closest star-like object to the moon. Although Mars looks like a star, it's really the fourth planet outward from our sun. And unlike the stars, which create light in their interiors, Mars shines by reflecting the sun's light.
Both Mars and the moon lie in front of the constellation Cancer, the crab, tonight. The moon is in a waxing gibbous phase, and it's bright enough to wash many stars from the sky. That's why you might not see any of Cancer's stars. Cancer ranks as the faintest constellation of the zodiac, but you can see Mars tonight. It should be bold and bright enough tonight to withstand the lunar glare.
Cancer is a constellation of the zodiac. It belongs to that narrow band of stars that the sun, moon, and planets travel across our sky. If you could see stars in the daytime, you'd see the sun in front of Cancer from about July 20th till August 10th every year. The moon never stops moving in orbit around Earth, and by tomorrow, the moon will have moved out of Cancer and into the constellation Leo.
But Mars will remain in front of Cancer's stars as seen from our earthly perspective until May 12th. So look outside tonight for Mars near the moon. I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Joel Block. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Sweden, for the first time, tops the rankings as the world's most networked economy. The Global Information Technology Report, 2009-2010, ranks 133 economies on how well they use information and communications technology, or ICT, to advance their economic growth and development. The report, published by the World Economic Forum, is being released in Geneva, from where Lisa Schlein reports.
Four Nordic countries rank among the top 10. The United States moves down two positions to fifth place. Two Asian tigers, Singapore and Hong Kong, also make the top 10. The report finds China and India have both moved up significantly in the rankings to 37th and 43rd positions, respectively. Holding up the bottom are a number of African and East Asian countries, with Chad coming in at number 133. The rankings measure the extent to which the use of ICT accounts for the economic successes and global competitiveness of countries. Economist at the World Economic Forum, Thierry Geiger, tells VOA ITC usage has become indispensable for any country that wants to increase its wealth and business. The report weighs in heavily on the ICT situation in developed countries, but Geiger explains it also examines what is taking place in the poorest countries. In compiling the rankings, he says the report does not compare a country such as Chad to the United States or Switzerland. Geiger says the value of the report is countries can compare their ICT experiences and learn from them to help improve their economies. He says the information technologies have a huge potential for boosting economic growth in all countries, even the poorest. He notes this message is getting across to countries such as Ghana, Botswana, and Mauritius, which are taking action to promote ICT to good effect within their societies. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is the Voice of America coming to you from the nation's capital, Washington. Why not come by our website sometime, day or night? You can get a summary of the latest world news, read reports from our correspondents in the field, see our charter, and more. It's all at voanews.com. That's voanews.com.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me and my co-host, Howard Lesser, every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show.
Signs of spring are everywhere here in Washington. Trees are budding, flowers are blooming, and store shelves are stocked with peeps. The marshmallow candies, shaped like baby chicks and bunnies, have been an Easter holiday favorite for more than half a century. VOA's Susan Logue has the story of peeps being used in art.
My name is David Adegali. I am a marshmallow peeps artist.
In 2003, Adegali created an installation work for an exhibition called Sweet Tooth, using more than 5,000 of the bright yellow marshmallow chicks. His peeps shrine measured 2.5 meters tall and more than 1.5 meters wide. Adegali has been making art from peeps for about a decade, but his love of the candy goes back even further.
It all started when I was a kid. I had peeps in my Easter basket every Easter, and they were one of my favorite candies.
As he got older, he began to think of the candy chicks as something more.
I was just really fascinated with their shape and their color and their texture. It's just such a unique candy. And I think part of that is you could only get it once a year at Easter time, and that's what kind of made it special.
For more than 50 years, Peeps have been made by Just Born, a family-owned company in Pennsylvania. And these days, the sugar-coated marshmallow treats are available year-round in other shapes and colors. Green trees, white snowmen, and chocolate reindeer for Christmas, pink hearts and chocolate teddy bears for Valentine's Day, and orange pumpkins and white ghosts for Halloween.
And what I'm trying to do is incorporate their different marshmallow products for the different seasons into my artwork for the different holidays. Sometimes they're easier to manipulate if they're a little bit soft.
On this day, Atagali is creating a piece called Bunny Chaos by gluing marshmallow bunnies of various colors to a canvas that has been painted black. The candies are at all angles, almost like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm trying to figure out how to mesh these.
Other budding artists have been inspired to work with Peeps. Every spring for the past 4 years, creative Washingtonians have submitted dioramas featuring the marshmallow chicks or bunnies to the Washington Post's Peep Show Contest. Last year's winner recreated Edward Hopper's famous painting, Nighthawks. The diner's waiter behind the counter and the customers on stools were all pink, blue, or yellow marshmallow bunnies. Atagali entered the contest once, but he didn't make the final cut. However, he has sold more than 10 works since he was invited to display them at Peeps & Company, the first retail store devoted to Peeps and other candies made by Just Born.
We opened December 10th. We had a ribbon-cutting ceremony.
Karen Simonet is general manager of the store, which is 16 kilometers south of Washington.
Although the other brands have a huge following and awareness, and they are iconic in their own right, Peeps is definitely the, I guess you'd say, the American hero.
You'll find more than Peeps candy here. There are glass-blown paperweights shaped like Peeps, giant plush toy Peeps, as well as notepads, pens, keychains, tote bags, sportswear, coffee mugs, even fine china decorated with Peeps' iconic yellow chick.
Thank you.
What did you buy today in the Peeps?
A whole bunch of stuff. Mouse pad for my husband and I, and some Peeps. My mom got me started on Peeps when I was young. I guess it's just the marshmallow and the sugar, and they just taste so good. I love them.
Thanks. We'll be back. What brought you to the Peeps store today?
I just had to come and see them. They're just adorable, and it means Easter, so I have to have some.
These customers are not alone. According to Just Born, the number of Peeps sold in the weeks before Easter alone could more than circle the equator.
Peeps.
Susan Logue, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for sports, and joining us with all the latest details is VOA's Teresa Sullivan. Teresa.
U.S. Major League Soccer kicks off its 15th season today after averting the first player strike in league history. A potentially crippling work stoppage was avoided when the players' union and owners agreed on a new 5-year labor contract last week. The season opens with the Seattle Sounders hosting the expansion Philadelphia Union. MLS Most Valuable Player Landon Donovan will be on the field for the Los Angeles Galaxy, which hosts the New England Revolution. In other football news, police in Turkey have arrested scores of people in connection with a Europe-wide football match-fixing scandal. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, where football is a wildly popular sport.
A football match-fixing scandal is dominating the news in Turkey, pushing aside judicial and political crises. The arrests were made in 26 towns and cities across the country. Some of those attained are household names in Turkey, where football is fanatically followed by tens of millions. One of those arrested is former international star Arif Erdem, who shot to fame in the 2000 European Football Championship by scoring the fastest international hat-trick. He's seen as the most significant arrest in Turkey's match-fixing investigation. Erdem is now coach of a First Division side and denies involvement in the scandal. The investigation is the biggest of its kind in Turkey. This latest inquiry is suspected to involve as many as 30 Turkish games. Football is a big business in Turkey, with the top 20 teams earning $6 billion last season. Rumours of match-fixing are frequently heard, with claims that clubs or referees threw games, but are usually dismissed as sour grapes from losing supporters. With so many arrests and more expected, any supporters' claim of vindication will be overshadowed by the realisation the nation's favourite game may have fallen victim to the scourge of corruption. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul, Turkey.
In the National Basketball Association, the Atlanta Hawks and the Boston Celtics both clinched playoff berths with victories Wednesday night. Atlanta's Josh Smith hit a slam dunk at the buzzer to lift the Hawks 86-84 over the Orlando Magic. Atlanta is headed to the NBA postseason for a third consecutive season. The Boston Celtics trounced the Denver Nuggets 113-99 to reach the playoffs. Celtics forward Kevin Garnett says they had a nice collective effort on the boards in this one.
Thought everybody took a group effort to come in and crash the glass. We knew that if we could rebound, we can get fast break points, we can get out, get the ball to Rondo, hit some lanes, and get some easy baskets.
Boston led by 21 points twice in the third quarter. Denver rallied to within 7 points of tying the score heading into the fourth, but that's as far as the Nuggets got. In other highlights, Cleveland star LeBron James netted 38 points to lead the NBA-leading Cavaliers in a 105-92 defeat of the New Orleans Hornets. Cavs head coach Mike Brown says this was a solid victory.
I thought we had some very good possessions offensively at moving the ball, moving bodies. Our spacing was good at times. We had multiple ball reverses at times. We had multiple driving kicks at times offensively, and that's always a positive.
Cleveland's victory stretched its winning streak to 8 games. And the NBA defending champion Los Angeles Lakers beat the San Antonio Spurs 92-83. All-star Kobe Bryant scored 10 of his 24 points in the fourth quarter in the Lakers' seventh consecutive win. New Jersey, Philadelphia, Oklahoma City, Charlotte, Utah, Indiana, and Golden State also won Wednesday. The second event of the Formula One racing circuit is in Australia this weekend, with former champions Jenson Button and Lewis Hamilton of McLaren hoping to knock Fernando Alonso of Ferrari off the top of the podium. Button won the 2009 race and used it to springboard to the driving championship. Hamilton also is looking to improve on his third-place finish in Melbourne last year. And that's a look at sports for this hour. I'm Teresa Sullivan.
Okay, thank you, Teresa. It's always nice for you to stop by with your sports report. This is the Voice of America, broadcasting from the VOA News Center in Washington.
This is Today in History. On March 25th, 1901, the Daimler Motor Company of Germany unveiled a longer, lower, and more powerful car that took the automotive industry beyond the world of the horseless carriage. Built for automobile dealer and racing enthusiast Emil Jelinek, the new owner asked Daimler to name the car after his daughter, Mercedes, a name still synonymous with technological leadership in the automotive industry today. On this day in 1954, the Radio Corporation of America began mass production of color television sets for the general public. The TV screen was tiny by today's standards, and the sets sold for $1,000, enough to buy a car in those days. There was another problem, too, the lack of color programming. On this day in 1957, France, West Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg established the Common Market, a major step in Europe's movement toward economic and political union. On this day in 1975, King Faisal of Saudi Arabia was assassinated by his own nephew. Faisal sought to modernize his nation and lent financial support to anti-Israeli efforts in the Middle East. And on this day in 1960, American singer-songwriter Roy Orbison recorded an operatic rock ballad, A New Sound in the Evolution of Rock and Roll. Only the lonely. After the success of Only the Lonely, Roy Orbison became an international rock and roll star. I'm Terry Wing with Today in History.
There goes my baby. There goes my heart. They're gone forever. So far apart.
but only a